Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Ready to get into it?
Yeah.
All right. We're going team by team.
I would be very careful about slinging stuff.
Am I going to get sued?
We got legal on this?
Let's send you out on the right note. PFF sucks. Have a great day, everybody. Wow.
All right, welcome into the PFF NFL podcast. Thursday, March the 7th, which means we are headed towards free agency, and the great Brad Spielberger is live on the show to help us break it all down. And I may or may not be able to hear him based off the last 20 seconds of this intro. How's it going, Brad?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
There we go.
Hear me?
Perfect. I can hear you. Awesome. A mere false alarm, but the sound for the show went entirely dead in my ear as the intro was going on, which didn't sound like an encouraging start to the show. So we're going to break down all things free agency. We will look at the class now that we actually know what it looks like with the franchise tags having been deployed, with guys getting cut left, right, and center, and then also talk about some potential landing spots for some of the top free agents. Sound good?
Sounds perfect.
Before we get into that, if you guys want to go over to the PFF Mock Draft Simulator and instead draft to your heart's content, we'll have a mock draft on the show on Monday. You can go do that right now. The promo code for 30% off everything there is 30MDS, 30MDS. Head over to the Mock Draft Sim, put in that promo code, get yourself 30% off, and fix your team immediately. All right, Brad, let's look at a free agency. I guess the first thing is some of the franchise tags that have been deployed. We finally got to see what the class actually looks like now that that happened. What was the most surprising franchise tag designation to you?
Yeah, I think probably Jarius Sneed. I know it's been a while now, but and obviously, look, we know he's a phenomenal football player. I think the Chiefs' calculus really came down to it became apparent that Jalen Johnson was going to get tagged by the Chicago Bears or get extended potentially. And so they said, we have the clear number one corner set to hit the market. Like, my number one corner now is Kendall Fuller, who's a good player, but going to be 30 years old pretty soon, looking for a third contract. So we have the clear number one corner available. Why would we let him walk for a hypothetical third round comp pick in 2025 when someone might trade with us and give us, I think, a second round pick? I don't see a first, but it just surprised me. I thought he was going to be the guy to leave, and Chris Jones, who I still think is going to get, be back in Kansas City and get signed. But yeah, that one. And then the biggest surprise, probably the non-tag of Christian Wilkins in Miami, is probably the true number one surprise.
Let's stay on the Kansas City thing for a second, because that there are a bunch of teams this season where, you know, one tag but two players hitting the open market, and obviously you've got to make that call. Which guy are we going to put the tag on? Which guy are we going to leave and potentially expose to the open market? And this happens every year, right? And the Giants were in this situation last year. It felt like they got a little bit greedy and they gave Daniel Jones the extension, used the tag elsewhere, and tried to get both of them in-house, whereas really sometimes you probably just have to make the call. One of these guys is going to be exposed to the market. And I feel like I'm contradicting myself at times, because now I'm looking at this and the Chiefs are in the same situation and they kind of did it. They did it the other way. They've gone, no, we're going to tag Sneed and therefore risk losing Chris Jones. But I guess the difference is immediately that happened, they were saying we've tagged him with the idea that we'll trade him. Like, it's not we're tagging to keep him. We're tagging him and then trading him away. So they are looking very realistically at heading into next season without both of their best two defensive players, because somebody surely is going to offer Chris Jones a kind of contract in free agency that Kansas City either can't or won't match.
You'd think so. I don't know. I think we might get a deal done before the 11th, or, you know, Kansas City also just has a pretty good gauge of what the other teams are going to come over the top with, because as big as the tag number would have been for Chris Jones, I think they would have just tagged him in that scenario. But hey, maybe. We had Mike Garafolo on NFL Network kind of hint at the Las Vegas Raiders, and they might want to do it just in large part to get him away from their rival in the division. So, yeah, no, it is interesting. And look, they obviously have shied away from some third contracts, but I don't see how you can't keep Chris Jones around right now. He's just still playing at the peak of his powers, frankly, getting better and doing different things and lining up, you know, on the edge and all these crazy Spags formations and alignments. So, yeah, it is an interesting approach, you know, and they have a bunch of other, you know, good free agents as well. Like, I mean, the tougher calls are going to be your Drew Tranquils, your Willie Gays, you know, your Mike Edwards, like guys that were contributors. Mike Dana, who we wrote an article about yesterday, which was very cool of him to talk with me. So, yeah, they have a lot of pieces leaving, but, you know, I don't think any of us are too concerned about them being continuing to be the class of the NFL.
I kind of hope that the Raiders thing actually materializes on the basis that I'm almost certain I was first on speculating on that, and now everybody's saying it, like all the insiders. Apparently Schefter was throwing that out there yesterday as well. So I want it to happen just so I can go back and find the receipts and predate Schefter and Garofalo and all those guys. Yeah, the Christian Wilkins deal was the other one that you mentioned. They chose not to franchise tag him. And this is weird for a couple of reasons. Number one, that draft class that he came out of for interior players is insane. Like, a ton of these guys, and all of them have ended up not just good, but getting paid, you know, the big second contract. And Christian Wilkins is the one that hasn't been. And now the Dolphins, are not only did they not get a big extension done, but they didn't even choose to franchise tag, and they're going to let him hit the open market. And Wilkins in particular, I think, is interesting because he's not the sort of cookie cutter, you know, three technique, lightweight, pass rushing defensive tackle that are easier to find than the guys that can do a little bit of everything at, you know, a significantly higher weight than that. And I feel like those guys are becoming more valued again, like the Dexter Lawrences of the world. Lawrence is one of one right now, but a lot of teams are trying to find that guy as opposed to, you know, just a good pass rushing interior defensive lineman.
Yeah, no, it's no doubt about it. Like the guys we've seen that can kind of take on more responsibility, like Christian Barmore in New England this past year, I think you saw him, like, he can two-gap, he can also get upfield, he can do everything. It is harder to find. The guys that can just, you know, line up and just shoot up into the backfield and try to make splash plays, and they might get blown past the quarterback sometimes, they might miss, you know, like, vacate a gap, but it's worth it because they also might get interior pressure, push the pocket, whatever. Guys that can do it all is harder to find. Yeah, I think Christian Wilkins is the bell of the ball, so to speak. I think he now is, after the franchise tags, the prize of free agency. I think his market's going to be kind of insane. You know, and look, there's just, I think, so many teams that would want to get in this market. Looks like a good guy. He's a funny guy, goofy guy. Plays also an insane amount of snaps at that position, too. He's a 900-plus snap guy, you know, on the interior defensive line. And they have good players there. You know, Zach Sealer and Raekwon Davis is also a solid rotational piece. So I think he just plays a lot because he's that good. I think his market's going to be pretty nuts.
So now that we've seen the franchise tag come down, what are the strengths and weaknesses of this free agent class overall?
Yeah, so I still think interior of the defensive line, you know, we lost, obviously, Justin Madubuike to the Baltimore Ravens franchise tag. But, again, we can pretend Chris Jones or, you know, whatever, speculate that Chris Jones is not going to stay. And, obviously, he's my number one free agent on the entire board. But then also there are some other guys as well, too. So, you know, we talked about, of course, Christian Wilkins. But, you know, DJ Reader, when healthy, is a phenomenal football player. I know he's coming off the torn quadriceps, but I did hear some positive things in Indy, just that, you know, he's trending in the right direction. A good prognosis there. Leonard Williams probably goes back to Seattle if they trade a second-round pick for him. But, again, not a guy that's going to get tagged. Maybe he finds a better deal elsewhere. You know, and Seattle just doesn't buy into the sunk cost. Then he has some really good run defenders, too. Like a Grover Stewart in Indianapolis, like that one's a strength for sure. And then everyone's tweeting about it this morning, you know, running back, linebacker, safety. I think it's always going to be a strong position in free agency because it's already good to begin with. And then a bunch of guys get cut because teams are sitting there saying, wow, there's so many good options at these non-premium positions. Why would we pay our guy, you know, X amount of money if we can just sign one of these guys for a value, and then you just add, you get more value because you flood the market with more players. So, but those spots are all loaded in particular, even more so than normal, in my opinion, particularly running back and linebacker, I guess less so safety. And then the weaknesses, corner now, we talked about L'Jarius Sneed and Jalen Johnson. Corner now, it's like, I don't know if you're finding a starter outside of, you know, a couple names.
Man, I don't know. I think corner is definitely, it's low on star power. You know, it's lost the top names, the guys that are going to come in and be real impact players. But I feel like if you have a terrible cornerback situation, you can find a capable starter actually in quite a few spots in this free agent class. Like, I think it's good in terms of crisis management. Like, if you have a catastrophic cornerback room, I think you can go a long way to fixing it in this free agent group. But if you have like an average group and you're looking for a difference maker, that's where you run out of options in this free agent group.
For sure. And that is obviously the kind of the crux of free agency anyway. So you're not finding star power and elite players, especially not at premium positions, which I know corner is kind of fringe in that conversation. But yeah, there are some guys. I just think in years past, we've had like more veteran that can be stopgap type players. And there are some of those, you know, Steven Nelson, Stephon Gilmore, like I think Adoree Jackson could bounce back. Right. And those are kind of the next tier right after Chido Awuzie and Kendall Fuller, who are my top two. But yeah, like it's just, you know, those guys also are all, you know, around 30 plus years old and carry some downside risk as well.
Yeah, and we've got some cut guys as well that I want to get to in just a second. I want to put a bow on the Chris Jones thing for a second, because there's a bunch of people in the chat sort of saying, look, they're bringing him back. He's definitely going to re-sign. And that might be true. I mean, you said it as well. The consensus appears to be that they believe they'll get a deal done. You know, everyone else believes they'll get a deal done. The only point I would make is that if you are Chris Jones' representative, right, if you are Chris Jones' agent, you would be insane to take a deal at this point and not at least see what's on the open market. And if what's on the open market is significantly more than what the Chiefs are willing to pay him, then as much as he might want to go back there, I mean, money speaks in the NFL. And a lot of times guys end up playing somewhere else when the money is better, even if they would like to stay wherever they are. So I acknowledge that everyone thinks this will get done and that Chris Jones will, in fact, return to Kansas City. But, you know, this point, March the 7th, with free agency just a few days away, you would be crazy to take a deal right now if you're Chris Jones, as opposed to exploring it and then coming back to them if you don't like what's there.
Yeah, and I would say two things. So first, like, it is crazy to have this level of confidence when, you know, flashback a year from 6 months from today when he was sitting out week one.
Holding out,
pissed off about his contract situation. So there's that, A. And then B, no one tampers, but I think he has a decent idea of his market is the thing. Like, Mike Evans didn't wake up one morning and decide that, you know, this Tampa offer feels better now. I don't know what's out there. I'm not going to go to March 11th. I just have a tingly sensation in my toes that I, you know, so they do know what's out there.
I don't know what you're talking about, Brad. They're not even like talk to people for days now. This is crazy talk.
You're right. You're right. What if I'm, it's, yeah, blasphemous of me. I apologize.
I wanted to talk about the, it feels like we're seeing an abnormal volume of just outright cuts and releases this year. Number one, is that true, or am I simply noticing it for the first time this year? Number two, if it is true, is this significant? Is it a result of the salary cap jumping by $30 million? Is it like significant of, is it a signal of like a change in approach to the salary cap by teams? But we're getting big players, you know, Kevin Byard. I mean, it's a lot of safeties. Kevin Byard, but Xavien Howard, Justin Simmons was released today. Vikings are getting rid of Alexander Mattison. There just seems to be cuts left, right, and center.
To me, it's pretty standard. I could go back and like look at data and actually give you a, you know, kind of more objective like approach to it. But it feels, you know, as someone who obviously monitors this stuff 24/7, 365, now this is kind of how it goes. Like, we get, you know, and some of it's name recognition, some's not. Like, Justin Simmons is still a very good football player. I know he had a bit of a downgrade for us, but a downgrade for Justin Simmons is like a 70 as opposed to a 90. So there are a couple, you know, Xavien Howard, I think, has kind of fallen off a little bit. Like, Trey White, I feel terrible for the guy, but ever since that ACL, he has not been the same player. So, like, I think there's just more of those scenarios Yeah, I think it's. I do think it's more just anecdotally, or maybe you're just noticing a little bit more.
It's probably
we always
names.
Get this. You know, this time of year we always get this.
Yeah, it's probably the names that are getting cut that makes it noticeable. You know, Tre'Davious. I mean, we are talking about a bunch of players that filled out Pro Bowl and All Pro rosters a couple of years ago, right? Justin Simmons, Xavier Howard, Tre'Davious White. Like these are potentially top tier players that simply haven't necessarily played like it, at least in the most recent season, and in a couple other cases, like for a while.
I think the thing too is, so I don't know about the cap and spike and all that, but I do think what could be a result of teams being more aggressive. And you know, look at Denver. Like, you know, if they didn't have the Russell Wilson situation, Justin Simmons is probably a Denver Bronco in 2024. Now, there's a counterbalance, right? Like, we want teams to be aggressive. We want teams to spend on the credit card and try to, you know, push their chips in and do all these things. There's just going to be, you know, some ramifications to that down the road and moves like that where, you know, so, like we talked about, hey, we love Justin Simmons, but he was owed, I think, $14.5 million in cash in 2024 for his age 30 or 31 season. He could have been worth that. We don't know. But there's a lot of, you know, our team's getting out a year early as opposed to a year late. The biggest one for me, actually, is Darius Williams. I think is another surprise. Mm. He's not really a good fit in Ryan Nielsen's defense. I think he wants to play more man coverage and probably up in press. And, you know, Darius is a pure outside 5'9" corner that plays a ton of zone. But he was awesome last year. He really played good football last year. But again, going to be 30 next year. I want to say maybe 29. Are some teams also just being like, let's be a year early, not a year late?
He's a guy who, outside of 1 year where they tried to make him into a slot corner because they looked at him and said, you're a slot corner, he's always graded well for us. Like, every single time he's played at the college and the NFL level in multiple different schemes, he's been good. Like, he's another example of, if you need a corner, like if you have a liability starting at corner on paper right now, say the Minnesota Vikings, right, and you look at your depth chart and you're like, that guy immediately upgrades that spot massively to bring him in, as long as you don't look at him and say he's 5'9", he has to play in the slot, because he's not a good slot corner, but he's a really good outside corner despite being small. So yeah, like, he's an example. I think there's good players available at corner. There just aren't great players available.
Yeah, no, it's a good point. He slipped my mind as I was thinking about it. There's a lot of these cuts, kind of to tie the whole conversation up too. I'm not really trying to add a lot of the cap casualties like into the top 100 or 200. Right. Like, I'm kind of just putting them at the bottom of the list because they should be there. The one exception I did make, though, was Jerome Baker in Miami. And that, again, is just a cap pinch. And just they've made a lot of trades. They've had, I think, 4-player draft picks in 2 years in a row without a first-round pick or a second-round pick 2 years ago. Anyway, Baker's 27 years old. Yes, he had the wrist injury at the end of the season, but he's still a good coverage player. Sure, maybe you could nitpick some parts of his game. Like, he was one where, again, like, I put him in the top 100. Like, he's one of the best off-ball linebackers available right away.
I've been asked this a bunch of times since it happened. I'm curious what your answer would be. What impact do you think the giant jump in salary cap is actually going to have? What's going to be the effect of that? Because it was relatively unexpected. I mean, there were general managers at the combine podiums that were like, yeah, we didn't see this coming at all. We're going back and redoing all of our numbers because we expected this to be $12 million less than it was. Like, it's extra money, but it's also extra money for all 32 NFL teams in a closed system. So what is it going to do? What change to free agency has an extra $30 million in the cap done?
Yeah, it's interesting. The teams I spoke with at Indy said it was more like, you know, maybe they didn't tell the GMs yet. They had like 247 to 250 was the numbers they were working off of. Still, obviously, 5 to 8 mil is different.
Right.
The answer I was giving a bunch in Indy was it changes like one or two decisions per team, I think. I think the L'Jarius Sneed is like my favorite example I've been using. I don't know if they were like not going to tag and then decided to, but I think it's possible, right? I mean, you add 5 to 8 million for a $19.8 million tag. It's a meaningful difference. So I don't think it's a huge difference. I mean, we're sitting here talking about all these cuts. Clearly, it's not, oh, we can just keep everyone and add everyone. Teams still care about the cash more than the salary cap. But I do think one edge, just like Kyle Duggar's transition tag, was that maybe New England saying, okay, we now think we can fit an extension for him on the books. The market's not going to be that strong, clearly, and we'll find a way to keep him around. So it's not this massive change. I think it's one decision per team.
I like that because that's basically the answer I've been given every time somebody's asked me about it. So it's always nice to hear the validation of someone that really knows what they're talking about give almost exactly the same answer. Anyway, taking care of your health isn't always easy, but it should at least be simple. And that's why for the last year or so, we've been drinking AG1 every day on the PFF NFL podcast. No exceptions. It's just one scoop mixed in water once a day, every day, and it makes me feel energized and ready to take on the day. That's because each serving of AG1 delivers my daily dose of vitamins, minerals, pre and probiotics, and more. It's a powerful, healthy habit that's also powerfully simple. I know with AG1, I'm giving my body high-quality nutrition. Every batch of AG1 goes through a rigorous testing process so you know it's safe. And the list of ingredients is sourced for absorption, potency, and nutrient density. I like to drink AG1 first thing in the morning, which is recommended for optimal nutrient absorption. Fill up your shaker with extra cold water, add one scoop of AG1, shake it up, and I'm ready to go. If I'm running short on time and I can't mix the AG1 before heading out, grab a travel pack. Each is an individual serving of AG1 that's easy to mix on the go, helping ensure I get my daily nutrients no matter what. If there's one product I had to recommend to elevate your health, it's AG1, and that's why I've partnered with them for so long. If you want to take ownership of your health, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free one-year supply of vitamin D3 and K2 and five free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase at drinkag1.com/PFF. That's drinkag1.com/PFF. Check it out. All right, let's we start doing some matchmaking, start doing some pairing up of top free agents with top teams.
Let's do it.
Let's go. All right, so we think Chris Jones is going back. The next massive domino is clearly Kirk Cousins. So this has felt to me that he's not playing in Minnesota. Like, if he was playing in Minnesota, this is one of those ones where it feels like there's a very easy way of getting Kirk Cousins to re-sign in Minnesota, and if that was the case, it would have happened already, right? He wants a re-up of the standard Kirk Cousins deal, the three-year fully guaranteed contract, and at 35 and a half years old coming off an Achilles, the Vikings don't want to do that. But there's probably a team out there that will, at which point Kirk goes playing somewhere else, right?
That is the read I have on it as well. You know, we're starting to see more and more reporting from all the big insiders and whatnot, and almost kind of like hinting. I think we get that with a quarterback or two in the offseason. Like last year, there were reports about Baker Mayfield and Tampa having mutual interest in like February. So I think it's Atlanta and Denver. We talked about one of these teams. Denver, I think maybe that's the signal we should be taking from them. You know, again, they had to make a bunch of moves to clear cap and, right, and get off some contracts. But I'm sure there's more coming. I think Simmons got his standalone announcement, and now there's probably a bunch more moves on the way. Maybe a Tim Patrick, a DJ Jones, like, you know, there's other names there that I'm keeping an eye on. So I think it's one of those two. I think it's the Denver Broncos and Sean Payton getting impatient and you know, building the Western version of the New Orleans Saints. And then I think it's Atlanta, who obviously everyone's been talking about. If I had to guess, it'd be the Atlanta Falcons. They're in a dome. They're in a bad division, unlike the AFC West. I think that one makes a ton of sense.
It does, right? That one's the one that's made all the sense all the way along. That, like, they, and we said, it's a good team. Like, the Atlanta Falcons, with all the weapons they have and with an offensive line that's really good, if you put Kirk Cousins on that offense, it's immediately a really good unit, and the defense is a work in progress. But signing Kirk Cousins lets you spend the eighth overall pick on maybe the first defender off the board, plus, you know, all the other draft capital they have. Like, they could make that team pretty damn good pretty quickly. It's not going to be rivaling Kansas City, but it's in a worse division. So they immediately catapult to the front of that division and, you know, look like a team that could make some noise in the NFC.
And I think it's got to be appealing, right? Like, you know, this is a short-term, yeah, you know, maybe two-year proposition. You know, it's just, yeah, like that is your easiest path forward to getting at least in the playoffs and just playing good ball. They have a good offensive line. They have good offensive weapons. Defense showed some strides last year and got better. You know, PFF Zach, obviously, I think would be a good pairing at offensive coordinator. They'll attack the middle of the field. They'll do all the things you want to see. Yeah, it seems to line up. And Arthur Blank is a guy that wants to spend, yeah, that is, I wouldn't say impatient, but you probably could say impatient, and just, like, wants to field a contender as often as possible. I think they are, like, too. It's a bad NFC, but they're pretty quickly, you know, arguably a top five team in the conference, you know, in an outcome where things go their way.
And I feel like, unlike you know, there are some quarterbacks that would just go wherever the money is highest. I feel like in addition to Kirk Cousins being in the sports business Hall of Fame in terms of his contracts throughout his NFL career, I think he's also acutely aware of, like, what's best for him, you know, in terms of – I mean, remember for years there was this speculation that Kirk Cousins kind of padded his stats, you know, late in the game. Let's not try that hard to come back. Let's just make sure we're getting completions and the passer rating's going to end up at 103 or whatever and the interceptions aren't going to be there. He's modified that throughout his NFL career, but I think when the Vikings deal, you know, when Washington finally said enough is enough and put a stop date there, he apparently had more money on the table from the New York Jets and instead chose Minnesota. We're talking a dome team. We're talking not the Jets. Like, there were reasons that it made more sense for Kirk Cousins to go to Minnesota, and obviously that's worked out really well. Again, if his options this offseason are essentially go back to Minnesota, go to Atlanta, dome, two reasonable rosters sitting there without Patrick Mahomes in the division, or go play in Denver where it's freezing cold for like a couple of months of the year at altitude in a division with Mahomes and, you know, Justin Herbert and all these kinds of things. I mean, if you're Kirk Cousins, it would take a lot of money to make me take that option versus the other two.
Yeah, and look, maybe there's a price. Maybe there's a number. But, you know, because like you said, he is a first ballot Business of Football Hall of Famer, no question about it. Might get his own wing in the building. But, it's just all those other factors, I think, matter at the end of the day. You know, obviously the kids and everything, and, like, you know, his wife's from Georgia. Everyone keeps talking about that, too. Like, that might be your last move. Like, you might be retiring to Atlanta and, like, you know, or the Georgia area, whatever. It seems like we're going to hear about that one. There's miraculously going to be a deal done at, you know, 4 p.m. or whatever it is, noon on March 11th.
Yeah. Let's say quarterback just because I think there's probably one more name that's worth talking about. Everyone has been saying, you know, Baker Mayfield, Tampa Bay, it makes all the sense in the world to just reunite, but it hasn't happened yet. And now you're starting to hear, oh, what if it doesn't happen? Like, suddenly Baker Mayfield might be the next best quarterback available on the market. You know, Peter Schrager during the combine, I think it was Schrager, right? Or was it Daniel Jeremiah, was saying maybe New England's in play. Is Baker going somewhere else actually a realistic possibility? And if so, where?
I don't really think so. You know, I think, again, if Tampa, you know, felt that was a real risk, I think they probably do place the franchise tag on Baker Mayfield and just work from there. You know, clearly they weren't going to do it to Mike Evans. They may not have even been able to, if I remember correctly. But regardless, they weren't going to do that to Mike Evans. Oh, no, what am I saying? They have Antoine Winfield. So I guess it wasn't really an option for them, but I just don't get the sense he's going to leave. I think the Liam Cohen hire at offensive coordinator is meaningful. They spent time together with the Rams last year for a stretch. It's just a good fit. It's a good pairing. Right. I think Baker and his camp, and they should do this, they have to do this, are just adding some leverage and getting some extra, you know, dollars added on. But I think he ends up back in Tampa.
All right. That makes sense. I can buy that. It is just interesting now, the closer we get to the deadlines, these things that people we just took for read are actually now in question or in jeopardy, because similar to the Chris Jones thing, like, doesn't make any sense to do the deal now unless you know for a fact, like Mike Evans, that the deal isn't there that you're going to want. Christian Wilkins, I guess. So we talked about him as one of the jewels. Where's Christian Wilkins going to end up?
Yeah, I think this is a long list here. You know, I'm starting to get interested in the Houston Texans potentially, and it's more so tied to a growing belief that Jonathan Greenard is not going to be back in Houston.
Right.
So, you know, where are they going to allocate those funds? And I think getting a stud interior defender, they also have Sheldon Rankins as a pending free agent. You know, and that front needs help. I think Wilkins would be a phenomenal addition there. I guess if we're going to talk Raiders with Chris Jones, if that's not a reality, you know, they should try to make a move there too. That pairing with, you know, Patrick Graham, who, you know, has some, like, Patriots ties, whatever. And I kind of lean on that too. Minnesota's the last one that, look, they're not in the greatest cap situation, but we're talking about Kirk Cousins leaving. You know, right. The guy who used the 13th overall pick on Christian Wilkins is the D coordinator in Minnesota, and they have, like, nothing, you know, on the defensive line or really interior defense, interior defensive line in particular. We'll see about Danielle Hunter and DJ Wonnum. But, yeah, that one I think makes a lot of sense too.
A couple of teams I think that would make some interesting sense. They're kind of contingent on what happens with guys they already have. If the Bengals don't get a deal done with DJ Reader, it would be an obvious automatic sort of like-for-like swap, right? Like, big guy that can play both run and pass and be a real wrecking machine in the middle of that defense for, again, a team that is looking to contend every year. And I think that sort of changes your appetite for aggression in free agency. Obviously, like Cincinnati's got, you know, whatever it is, $50 million of cap space, but it's not real because they're projecting, you know, future deals that they got to get done, right? So, but I think they have enough gammo to go after a guy like that and make it happen if that's their one big aggressive move in free agency. The Indianapolis Colts, same kind of idea to pair with DeForest Buckner to replace a guy like Grover Stewart on that defensive line. That could be an interesting fit for them. So those are two teams I think that would have the appetite for it, the money for it, and it would make enough sense that, you know, they're both in position that it would help them and it wouldn't be just squandering money.
The Bengals is definitely a good shout. I think they are going to do something, whether they keep DJ Reader or not, and I think they are going to. I think there was a report out of Cincy he's like been working out like in the facility the whole time and rehabbing, which I guess this could be standard. I mean, you're still on the team under contract and you're hurt. So, but like, I don't know. BJ Hill's a solid player. They just they don't really have anything beyond that at this point. You saw it last year too when DJ Reader was out. I mean, they were just getting blown off the ball at the line of scrimmage. Could not defend the run very well at all, and obviously we're giving up explosive passes at one, I think, the highest clip in the NFL. So I like mapping. If they're going to make one sort of bigger move, and look, they've spent a little bit here and there. Mm-hmm. I would say interior defensive line makes a lot of sense.
Let's go Danielle Hunter. I guess the prize of the edge rusher group, which I think is really strong, actually, in this free agent class. A lot of good edge rushers. A little bit older, but still, you know, just 29 years old, basically in his prime, at his peak. Where's Danielle Hunter going to end up?
Yeah, I think him and Grenard are the two big ones that'll get pretty strong deals, you know, and then it gets into, like, the Bryce Huffs of the world. I don't know. It's tough with Hunter. Like, I think it does matter, you know, if the health and all that checks out. He has played a ton of snaps the last 2 years.
Right.
Arizona, to me, maybe is an interesting thought. Jonathan Gannon did cross paths with Hunter in Minnesota. It is a while ago now, but, you know, Gannon was there, then the Colts, and then obviously Eagles and Arizona. They just need so much help on defense. Maybe they feel it's a little bit too early to be making moves like that, but I also kind of see a scenario. Well, let's say Arizona, you get fully healthy Kyler, who looked good the last month of the season last year. Let's say they add a blue chip, you know, tackle or receiver fourth overall. You have another first-round pick. Maybe you get receiver or tackle, whatever you don't take with fourth overall.
Right.
And then, I don't know, you bring back a Marquise Brown or whatever. The defense is still pretty far away. But if you have B.J. Ojolari, you add Danielle Hunter, there may be maybe a Christian Wilkins team too. Like, I don't know. You could probably sell me on, like, they're closer maybe than we think.
Yeah, and well, not even necessarily that, but just like you can turn that around quite quickly if you put the right pieces together. Let's stay in the same division. I'm going to pitch you one. The Los Angeles Rams, right? They finally have a first-round pick. They're done with the FDM picks approach. They're not trading first-rounders for superstars left, right, and center. But I don't think that means they're necessarily out of the big swing for superstar veteran sweepstakes. Instead, they're going to focus on free agency. And Danielle Hunter being paired next to Aaron Donald with Byron Young on the other side, that's fireworks to me. There aren't many of these guys, right? But Danielle Hunter is on the TJ Watt spectrum of consistently gets more sacks than the overall level of pressure he generates would suggest he should have. So if however you want to describe that, he is a sort of certified statistical finisher relative to some other edge rushers. Pair that with Aaron Donald, who is still a wrecking machine inside. Dude's going to have like a sack record season if he goes joins the Rams.
He really might. And also, I think underappreciated, and some of it's volume, but I think he's second behind Max Crosby in defensive stops over the last 2 years at edge. I think it's only, and Crosby's in like a category of his own,
right.
But like, he's a very good run defender too. He still is a very, very good player on all three downs.
Yeah, so I like that one. I've been pitching that for a while, that Danielle Hunter goes to the Rams. Let's just cover Legarius Sneed as well, since he's apparently available for trade. Where would you see a good fit for him being traded to?
Yeah, I think there's a ton of teams on this list. You know, I think, does Pittsburgh get in the mix because they desperately need help at corner? You know, like I said, it's a second-round pick, so I think it's going to be pricey. I've seen some Atlanta, and there was an article that came out yesterday where Atlanta was on the list. I don't know, A.J. Terrell might reset the cornerback market or come close to it this offseason, so maybe it's a bit much. The Raiders make a lot of sense to me. Again, do they, you know, is Kansas City going to trade their best corner or one of them, you know, to a division rival? Jacksonville, we talk about cutting Darius Williams, talk about a Ryan Nielsen defense that I think would love a Legarius Sneed. Jaguars also need help. You know, the inside-outside versatility I think would be huge for them too, because they're working through outside corner and slot. They've kind of had Tyson Campbell there. Trey Herndon's a pending free agent. So, yeah, I guess the Jags are intriguing to me if they want to make a decent-sized splash. And then, yeah, if Pittsburgh, if they want to step up and take a swing and try to win with this kind of older roster, they need corner badly.
Yeah, even with, you know, Joey Porter Jr. potentially getting better in year two and, you know, becoming one guy, they still need another one. Let me pitch you a team, though, for this. The Detroit Lions, a team that got to the NFC Championship game, almost knocked the 49ers off with that first half performance. Last year, obviously, they spent in free agency to just kind of get solid at corner, right? Let's throw in a bunch of veterans just to make sure it isn't a catastrophe back there. I don't think any of them really worked out necessarily. They weren't bad, but they weren't great. Like it kind of did what it was supposed to, but they didn't get any surplus value out of that by incredible performances. Brian Branch comes into the draft, looks phenomenal as a slot guy, but Legarius Sneed, like if they can secure that with the contract that they would need to give him, the cap space that they have to make that happen, like that would be the best draft pick that they could spend this offseason.
I think it's very fair. I think it's very, very fair. And again, a team that plays a ton of like press man coverage, and also him and Cam Sutton would kind of, I'm not comparing Cam Sutton to Trent McDuffie, but both of those guys can play inside and out. You can mix and match things. I think they need a blitzing element. Like Glenn started dialing up a lot more blitzes, and Brian Branch obviously has some of these skills as well. So I guess he'd be more of an outside guy. But yeah, I mean, no disrespect, like they didn't even tender Jerry Jacobs, and Kendall Vildor is not a starting caliber corner probably in this league. I mean, good for him to still be doing so. But yeah, I mean, I love that idea. It's again, I think Detroit to me needs to spend either on defensive line or corner, make something of a splash, like a pretty sizable move. And I don't hate that idea at all.
Exactly. They're a team that feels ripe for the, you know, we're not one player away from the Super Bowl, but we are in a position now where one high quality player for like reasonable top of the market money would move the needle for this team. So bringing in a guy like that who is, you know, can play inside or outside, can play a man or zone, can do everything you want and be a top tier corner on the outside, that changes the dynamic of that defense. And because of his age, like you're not squandering money. Like you're not just, it's not a Von Miller move, right? Where you're like, we're one player away. Let's throw the house at him and try and get over that hump. You're like, no, this makes perfect sense for a long-term sustainable run in the NFC. And it would like tick all the boxes there. One player that I want to talk about that I haven't heard mentioned much this period yet. Tyron Smith is hitting free agency, and okay, Tyron Smith is going to be hurt for a period of your season. But for the period that he isn't hurt, he's going to look like one of the best 3-5 left tackles in the NFL. And there's a bunch of teams out there for whom that would be a real big improvement. What does Tyron Smith's marketplace look like, and where does he end up?
I think this, to me, is our first official, the New England Patriots dynasty has returned. I think Kansas City Chiefs make all the sense in the world. Like you said, there is some risk if he misses time, but you know, I've always been high on Wanya Morris. We saw him play a little bit last year. It was up and down, but I don't think he's ready to start yet. And I think Kansas City, you know, obviously late in the first round, it works out very nicely for them that tackle and receiver, their two biggest needs. You might get a day one starter at either of those positions at 32nd overall. But I just think when you're Tyron Smith and you're moving on, look, this is a guy that I tweeted about this like years ago. Like, I think he probably gave Dallas $50 million in savings by not asking for an extension. He had an 8-year extension that he signed and almost completed it. The last year of the deal was last year, and he took out like a pay cut. Give me a 1-year flyer to the Kansas City Chiefs. It's like one of my favorite. Just do this. I want to see it. Matches of the offseason.
I like that. I also feel like the Jets would make a lot of sense. In this Aaron Rodgers, you know, kind of all-in season, like the offensive line was a disaster. Okay, you have to budget in the idea that he's going to miss a period of time, and we don't know how long that is, right? It could be one game, it could be six games, could be longer than that. Like, that's a gamble. But in terms of let's just fix left tackle, it doesn't get much better than let's bring in Tyron Smith for like $10 million this year. Done.
I think it's a good point. I think it's a very good point. If they can convince him, you know, same as Dwayne Brown, but just, hey, come here. We'll have a bunch of, you know, cheap depth behind you and whatnot, but You're here for the Aaron Rodgers show. We'll pay you probably, you know, they'd probably pay a premium at that point and give more money than anybody else want to offer. Because I don't think they're going to make a splash, the Jets, this offseason, but I think they will. For a bunch of vets, stopgap vets that would get seven elsewhere, the Jets will offer 10 and just like try to get things right. Done. You know, just a random two numbers thrown out. But you know what I mean. So, yeah, I don't hate that one at all.
I also think, by the way, if you're looking to sort of fix a tackle spot, I mean, you could go out and sign both Tyron Smith and Josh Jones, given the contract that seems to be attached to Josh Jones these days. Guarantee yourself solid left tackle play, right? We're going to get all pro-level play for 12 games, and then the five remaining that he's not playing, we throw out Josh Jones, who's a perfectly capable starter. Boom, we are done at left tackle.
Boom, love it. That's a good combo package there.
This whole GM thing's easy. I could do that.
It's not complicated, fellas. It's not hard. Just get a swing tackle and a future borderline Hall of Famer. It's like, come on.
And get it for pennies on the dollar, and then that's how you win. Profit.
What are you groveling about? It's the easiest thing ever.
Not a problem. All right, I want to talk these two guys combined, because after Mike Evans re-signs and Michael Pittman gets franchise tagged, the top of the wide receiver market is now Marquise Brown and Calvin Ridley. So, and they're both interesting players because I think they're both good. They've both just demonstrated that they're not superstar number one receivers. So I feel a little bit like the receiver market, this free agency, is a bit like the corner market, where if you need to transform a receiver room, not going to happen. You're going to have to wait to the draft. If you just want to add to one that's already there and kind of improve it, I think you can do that in several spots. So where are Brown and Ridley going to wind up?
Yeah, these are boring answers. I kind of get the sense that both go back to where they were. Maybe less so Marquise Brown. Obviously, this regime did not trade for him.
Right.
He was one of my surprises of the offseason. Like, I'm sure people have made fun of me having him above Calvin Ridley. It's more so these 3 years younger, and I just don't think Ridley leaves. But I watched the tape of him, and when he was healthy, he was still a very, very good separator, good route runner. I think he still gets off the line really well despite his size, like the nuance and you know, late hands, all those cliches. Like, you saw all of it. And when he was healthy, too, there were stretches of the last two seasons where his volume was insane. Like, there were, like, six-week stretches where he was top five in targets across the entire NFL and producing with that. So I wonder if Arizona and his buddy Kyler Murray can convince him, hey, it's not a one-year flyer because the market's not going to be strong. You missed too much time. Come back for a year. We'll ball out. We'll play much better. And then maybe either you sign here or you go elsewhere. And then the Ridley dynamic, people have probably heard about this by now. The Jaguars, if they sign him to an extension before March 13th, they owe the Falcons a second-round pick. If they sign him after that, it stays a third-round pick. So, again, I'm not accusing anyone of anything or any shenanigans or any hoopla across the league. But, I think he's back in Jacksonville. It might just take a little bit of time to let him test the market, let him test the waters. And maybe he does go elsewhere. It's kind of tough for me for both of those guys of where else I'd put him.
The only thing about the Ridley dynamic, sort of in abstract terms, I think Ridley going back to Jacksonville makes a lot of sense. The only thing that makes me pause there is that I don't think you necessarily need a number one superstar wide receiver, but if you're not going to have that guy, you need to create one in the aggregate of your five wide receivers or whoever you've got. And the only problem I have with that in Jacksonville is that I feel like Ridley and Christian Kirk are too similar and actually cannibalize each other's impact. So, like, I think each one of them can create, you know, a number one wide receiver in the aggregate if you found the right combination of pieces, but I think both of them together taking up 40% of your wide receiver room just feels like it isn't doing that. It's not maximizing that impact. And for that reason alone, I might sort of look at it and say maybe Jacksonville decides it's not worth keeping them around and, you know, we go find a different type of wide receiver to add to the room.
Yeah, it's an interesting thought. Like, I don't think he's like an X. Like, I think he's a move right. Z type guy. I guess you could put him in the slot. Like, I see what you're saying.
A name for Marquise Brown that I think makes some sense is Tennessee. So the Titans obviously brought in Nuke Hopkins, who's basically the only target that Will Levis has any kind of faith in, right? Let's just heave it up to Nuke. Nuke's a good player, but there's some missing parts of his game now in terms of he doesn't scare anybody deep, you know, and all the missing elements of Nuke's game. Marquise Brown, that's like what he does, right? So now you've got a guy that can run vertical. You've got a guy that wins with separation. Suddenly, now you're putting together a number one receiver in the aggregate, and Will Levis actually has somebody to play with.
I like that. I like that. They definitely need help, for sure. And obviously, Brian Callahan's coming from a team that just had Jamar Chase and T. Higgins and Tyler Boyd, who is a free agent, and maybe he's the reunion there. But, yeah, we still haven't seen much from Treylon Burks. It's tough because he was showing some flashes. And then, of course, that gnarly concussion against – it was a Steelers game. But, yeah, if you want Will Levis to develop, you already have him playing behind the worst offensive line in the NFL, and his only pass-catching option is a 32-year-old Luke Hopkins. You got to do something.
Who was, like, you know, a late afterthought in terms of trying to fix the mess of a receiver core as well. It's not been set up to succeed as poor old Will Levis. Tyler Boyd, just because you brought him up, right? Tyler Boyd must be the most untalked about free agent in this entire group, right? We are minutes removed from being, oh, the Bengals with their trio of Jamar Chase, T. Higgins, and Tyler Boyd. It's incredible. And now it's just all the focus is on T. Higgins and his franchise tag designation. And it's just accepted Tyler Boyd's leaving and nobody cares. Is Boyd going to Kansas City not the most obvious, like, upgrade in the world this free agency period?
He would make a lot of sense. I guess, you know, Rasheed would be more outside at that point. But I do get the sense, too, that, like, if you're Brian Callahan going to this new team and you want to bring in just, like, a reliable, solid veteran that just, like, helps you kind of establish your culture and all that yada yada, I love that. Just those two just rejoining forces in Tennessee.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a few places that Boyd makes a lot of sense. But, man, if you're Kansas City and you're like, this receiving core let us down last year, we need to make something happen. And, sure, there's probably going to be one available in the first round when we rock up that we like the look of. But also, like, Tyler Boyd might be able to be snagged for almost nothing. And Tyler Boyd with Patrick Mahomes just feels like printing money at that point. Bryce Huff. Bryce Huff, I think, is one of the most interesting free agents in this entire class. It feels to me like, I mean, he's not, you know, this world of reclaim the comparison, right? Bryce Huff is not Cameron Wake. On the other hand, in terms of a player who excelled in a limited, designated pass rusher type of role, Cameron Wake was eventually given, you know, a full-time gig, and we scaled up his workload, and we see if it would still translate and scale, and it did. Is Bryce Huff going to get that kind of deal from somebody where they say, we're reasonably convinced that this will still work over 800 snaps instead of 400 snaps? Let's give him the money. We'll project it forward. And if it works out, we got an absolute steal.
The comp I had here for the free agent article, and it was, the profile was very similar, was Pernell McPhee, who's a similar guy, right? Okay. He was in Baltimore, was also a clear designated pass rusher, rotational piece. It's tough because he went to Chicago and had the knee injuries cropped up and kind of ended his career, but he was very productive when he did play on that second deal within a bigger role. It just very quickly kind of crashed and burned, you know, for other reasons. So I think Bryce Huff is going to get a pretty strong deal. You know, it's not going to be crazy. I have it at 3 years, 50. Even that might be somewhat high side, but, you know, with the cap jump and the guys getting tagged and Josh Allen and Brian Burns, you know, someone's going to get pay a little bit too much. I love Washington here. Like, you have Dan Quinn, who goes to a new team, has no edge rushers to speak of. I think he'd be a perfect fit playing off the big interior defenders. There's immediate quick pressure guy. And, yeah, you still probably, you know, in theory, Dan Quinn, you know, the first year he might play 800 snaps, but right. You get to a point where he's more a member of a rotation. So that's my favorite spot there. I think it makes all the sense in the world.
I like that one. The next guy I want to talk about, Patrick Queen. I think this is interesting for a couple of reasons. Number one, linebackers are getting lumped into this world of running backs and safeties as the three positions in the NFL that are, like, getting depressed right now that there's no market for. I actually feel like linebacker might not be in the same category as the other two. I'm starting to think that there's going to be a pendulum swing back in the direction of actually athletic, capable, off-the-ball linebackers that can move with purpose are much more valuable than people give them credit for. And Queen's market is interesting to me because we've got a couple places where that makes some sense, right? We've got, obviously, the connection with Seattle because Mike McDonald is now the head coach there. Does he immediately bring in one of his, you know, defensive players from Baltimore and set out a stall that way? But also, you know, somewhere like Washington, where their new regime, essentially, in terms of personnel, are coming from San Francisco, where they just had Fred Warner and Dre Greenlaw and these athletic superstar linebackers, and you see what the impact that can have. Again, Patrick Queen is not Fred Warner, but he is an athletic linebacker that if you could talk yourself into, he can be our version of that within this defense.
Yeah, he's also not even 25 years old yet, so right. He's... And the linebacker draft class is not perceived to be very good. And the guy, there is a ton of depth behind him, but there's not, like, he's the one guy I think they make, like, as a splash addition. Like, I like Jordan Brooks' tape a lot when I watch him for the free agent stuff, but Queen is an all-around player, can rush the passer. He's gotten better in coverage over time. I think he just kind of the game slowed down for him. They're very different play style-wise, but there are shades of, like, the Tremaine Edmonds situation last year where I don't think his later career breakout is because he was, like, not trying. He's just, like, it's the maybe the hardest position outside of corner to play right now. They're in conflict on every snap. So I do agree with you. It's a fascinating market. There are six players right now at linebacker making more than $10 million a year. Like, it is one of those where the elite guys are paid and everybody else is in a pinch. And a lot of the guys that are paid highly, your Shaq Leonards, your Jerome Bakers, like, you have a down year, boom, you're done, you're cut, we're moving on. So I don't even know where, like, Houston, I think, intrigues me just because you have D'Amico Ryans, who's the linebacker guru, but you also could probably sell yourself on, yeah, but why spend a ton there if you know, D'Amico can get a career out of Blake Cashman, maybe bring him back, can you know, get all this growth from these other players, maybe go cheap there and spend a ton elsewhere. So on the field, I agree. If you can get a guy like a Fred Warner that is, you know, it just is the biggest mismatch chess piece, like, advantage for you over the middle of the field, you got to keep that guy. It's just, it's so tough to, in the draft, it's impossible to identify who those guys are,
right,
for the most part. And then it's just, yeah, it's a tough spot right now with, I agree, increased on-field value, and then the market is not feeling the same way because it's tough to kind of identify who can be that guy for an extended period of time.
All right, a few more names I want to quick rapid fire through, and you can just give me a destination and maybe why. The first one I want to talk about is Michael Owenu from the Patriots, who is fascinating to me this offseason because he's always graded well for us, right? From day one, when we had zero expectations of him doing anything, always graded well. He's played, I think, three different positions for them on the offensive line. I think his best position is right tackle, but they didn't franchise tag him. You know, they exposed him to the open marketplace. I'm curious to know whether the rest of the NFL sort of views him the same way the Patriots did, which is, he's all right, but not great. We're not going to pay huge money for him. Or if there's some team out there that sort of looks at him the way PFF grades does and says, this guy's like a high level starting right tackle and we have a real hole at right tackle. Again, say like Cincinnati, right? And says, let's go and pay Michael Owenu and get him in there and we immediately upgrade on the offensive line.
It is a great question. I think it's also, you know, he's like 6'3", 350. Like, it's there's some scheme stuff there as well with all these teams going lighter and smaller and faster at the position. You know, he's kind of a throwback player a bit. So there's been a lot of buzz there. There's been a lot of positivity from reporting. I personally haven't heard anything firsthand. He fired his agents like a week ago, which, I don't know, generally isn't maybe the greatest sign in the world. I don't know. He also could just be confident he's doing it himself, and that's totally fine. There are probably – Cincinnati was one team I was going to mention. I don't hate the idea of if Detroit loses Jonah Jackson, my thinking there is you bring in Onwenu from – you know, played at Michigan, and then he's a guard for the first year, but hypothetically, we're thinking many steps down the road here now. If Taylor Decker is not on the roster in 2025, you move Penei over to left tackle, you maybe have Onwenu as a right tackle, and you just keep this train rolling. So – and the Lions actually have both guards are pending free agents. So him and, you know, Jonah Jackson and Glasgow. And then the last one, Seattle's interior. And I guess there he'd be a guard for sure. But both of their starting guards are pending free agents. I like Damian Lewis a lot, and they should bring him back. But anyway, that one makes sense to me too.
All right, Chase Young, still not 25 years old. One of the best edge rusher prospects we've seen ever enter the league. Washington got rid of him. San Francisco brought him in. They're not keeping him around by the looks of it. Where does Chase Young end up?
This to me is a classic, like Baltimore Ravens. Give a guy a one-year flyer, get everything out of him, and he performs way better with you than anybody else. That's where I like him going.
Nice. And then the running back market. So let's start with Saquon Barkley.
Houston's intriguing to me. Like, do they just say, hey, let's get a pass catcher, pass blocker, good runner still, add a weapon to this offense? You know, they have Tank and Nico, but, you know, and maybe they can spend elsewhere. And I guess they just extended Dalton Schultz. But get a, you know, last year, like, their run game, they ran the ball a ton. PFF Bobby was pounding the rock. It wasn't very efficient for the most part.
Right.
So get Saquon Barkley. They already spent on offensive line. So get Saquon Barkley in there. I don't know. That one intrigues me.
Yeah, that's definitely – look, we love PFF Bobby, and obviously he took some things from his time at PFF. He did not take the diminishing value of the running back position. Bobby wants to run the ball, and Bobby wants more effectiveness than was there last season. So I think the Texans are absolutely in the market for investing in the run game somewhere, and maybe it's Saquon Barkley, maybe it's the draft, whatever, but they're going to try and make that better this offseason. So I think that makes a ton of sense. Same idea, Josh Jacobs. Where are we going here?
I think he's more likely to go back. You know, I know Antonio Pierce loves him and wants him to be a focal point. If not, I mean, these ones get tough. Like, Green Bay was allegedly in the Jonathan Taylor market, thought about trading for him when he was, you know, maybe available. Maybe they make a splash there because A.J. Dillon's a pending free agent. Sounds like they're asking Aaron Jones to take a pay cut again. I don't know. It's so hard to project, but I guess I'll go Green Bay.
And then the last running back, maybe the most interesting one in terms of contracts, what happens to Derrick Henry? Because we're almost 30 years old. We've got like a million miles on the clock, right? He's one of those old Toyota Hilux things that just won't die. He's already a complete anomaly in terms of what running back should be. What happens to him this offseason?
Get me Derrick Henry in a backfield with Lamar Jackson on the Baltimore Ravens and just have the most diabolical zone read and play action offense the world has ever seen. I need it. I don't want it. I need it.
Do you feel like he actually gets a bigger contract than people are going to expect for a running back for all those things that I mentioned, right? Insane mileage, almost 30 years old, because he is the exception. Like, the thing that we always say, don't chase the exceptions. Don't try and find a guy that you think is a unicorn, because most of the time they're not. I mean, Henry is. He's already shown that he is, right? The rules are different for him than they are for other people. The only question is how different and how far can you push that before you get into trouble?
Yeah, my thing is just the contract, no matter how long it actually is, would be effectively a one-year deal. So it's like that's the – but, yeah, he bucks all those trends. I don't care how many touches he's had,
right?
Any of those things. I mean, the guy had like 80 carries a game in high school. He's been doing it for a very long time. It sounds like we're trying to like – he's different. He's the exception, which we say about a lot of guys. It's not true. It's true with Derrick Henry. He may not peak at his powers 2019 Derrick Henry. He is still a very, you know, efficient and good football player. He's different.
And we have to remember, he's been running behind the worst offensive line in football for two straight years. Like, you change that to just an average group in front of him, you immediately go back to King Henry or some version of that. Like, you know, it's almost impossible to overstate the negative impact that had on his production over the last 2 years.
Yeah, it's a very good point. I mean, truly, as bad as it gets up front. And so, yeah, there you could probably make the argument there's some upside there, at least from a just lack of negatives, right? Like, you know, his breakaway runs and all that, probably going to maintain, but still going to be an elite short yardage red zone guy, and you probably could say there'll be fewer, you know, negative or zero yard rushes just because of the blocking in front of him.
Right. Everyone has been pulling up the Baltimore connection there as well. Like, I would love to see that. I think I think actually that's what it is. Everyone just wants to see Derrick Henry with Lamar Jackson in the backfield. Like, just make that happen. Like, can we all just agree as an NFL, as a landscape, let's just put that together and just see it, just as an experiment. We owe it to
just
science.
Just an experiment.
Yeah.
Just to see what happens.
We owe it to science to see what that would produce. And I think all other 31 NFL teams should be on board with that. It's just an experiment, and we all deserve to see what it looks like.
It's an entertainment business, people.
Exactly.
You know, don't take it too seriously.
It's an entertainment business at the end of the day, right? That's why the whole thing is scripted. Free agency starts next week. Thank you for coming here on Thursday, to preview it all, Brad. We will be back next week in some combination. Steve is still busy making some Mexican resort rue the day they came up with the concept of all-you-can-eat, all-inclusive idea. We don't know where he's going to be next week. There's some family matters on the horizon. So it may be you and me, Brad. It may be me and who the hell knows. But anyway, we will be back in our usual cadence of Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday next week. Thank you all for watching, and we'll see you then.